Welcome to Quest for Gold, episode 25. We are now 167 days away from the opening ceremonies in Paris, and we start on the hardwood where the U.S. women's basketball team is taking form. They're actually in Antwerp, Belgium at the FIBA Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament. There are seven previous Olympians on this roster, including Diana Taurasi, who's seeking her sixth Olympic gold. The rest of the team this weekend: Ariel Atkins, Aaliyah Boston, Nafisa Collier, Kalie Cooper, Ryan Howard, Sabrina Ionescu, Jewel Lloyd, Kelsey Plum, Brianna Stewart, Alyssa Thomas, and Jackie Young. This may not be the final roster heading into Paris, but it's probably pretty close. The U.S. women's basketball team is seeking an eighth straight Olympic gold medal. Tens of thousands of more tickets for the Olympic Games in Paris were released this week. They are available on the game's official ticketing website. People can purchase them first come, first serve without a lottery. About half of the tickets cost a little more than $100 each. Olympic rings have formally been added to Milano Cortina as the Italian city marked 2 years until the Winter Games there this week. Many of the venues for those games still haven't been determined, including where the opening ceremonies will be held. Sticking with winter sports, congrats to Team Schuster and Team Peterson. The previous Olympic curling teams notched convincing wins to defend their titles at the men's and women's nationals last week in New Jersey. Women's wrestling this week took another step toward becoming an NCAA championship sport. The NCAA Committee on Women's Athletics voted to recommend Divisions 1, 2, and 3 sponsor legislation to add a National Collegiate Women's Wrestling Championship. It could come as soon as the winter of 2026. Flag football was showcased last weekend in Orlando as part of the NFL Pro Bowl. Peyton and Eli Manning captained the AFC and NFC teams. Flag football will, of course, be introduced as an Olympic sport in 2028. Also last Sunday, at the exact same time, Noah Lyles topped a new personal best on the track in the 60-meter. This was part of the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. Lyles swept the world championships back in August, winning the 100-meter, 200-meter, and 4x100-meter. And after winning Sunday, he told NBC after the race, "We're coming after everything, all the Olympic medals. I don't care who wants it. It's mine." Also in Orlando last weekend were the U.S. Olympic marathon trials. Two men, Connor Mance and Clayton Young, punched their tickets to Paris with a 1-2 finish. The third-place finisher, Leonard Carrier, could still make the Olympic team. We'll have to see what the May 5th international ranking cutoff is, though, first. On the women's side, Fiona O'Keefe, Emily Sisson, and Dakota Lindworm are all Paris-bound. Takes a lot to run a marathon, even more to qualify for the Olympics. We had a chance this week to speak with Joanna Garten, author of the book All in Stride, which started as a book about marathon running, but ended up telling an incredible story about athletes coming to the U.S. to live out their dreams. But just like a marathon, it can have its ups and downs.
It's such an incredible sport because, on one hand, very challenging, very, very difficult. Many of the people in the trials this weekend didn't even finish. I mean, saw them. Their bodies broke down. They were off on the side. They couldn't finish. But it's also a sport that if you dedicate yourself to it, anyone can do it. Is there something that drew you to this sport in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a lifelong runner myself, so I'm very much drawn to running narratives. And I also really love stories of immigrants. And so this particular story kind of drew those pieces of the things I love together. And it was a no-brainer for me to really dive into this story and tell the story of these two incredible athletes.
What is it about the story of the runner that makes it so compelling? Is it the athlete's desire to push through pain and adversity? There's almost a story in and of itself for every run that they make, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, it's everything that you'd imagine, right? The story of running, the long distance running in particular, it's always a story of perseverance and so much more than a physical pursuit, as so many things in life are, right? So many things in life come down to the challenge of the mind rather than the body, because as you say, anyone can train their body to do certain things, given the right resources and tools, but it really takes somebody very unique to be able to train that mind to accomplish something like a marathon, or even shorter distances at the sort of high performance level that these athletes are doing. So that in and of itself, I thought was very inspiring. But then the juxtaposition of the perseverance and dedication it took to grow up in a small remote Kenyan village and be able to make this journey to the United States and become a world-class athlete. That journey as well was so fascinating to me, and kind of putting them together, it was just beautiful.
Go ahead, get into the story a little bit.
Yeah, so the book is the story of two American long distance runners. Elvin Kibet is the woman in the story, and Shadrach Kipchirchir is the man, and they happen to be married. They are American citizens, but they were born in Kenya, in small, tiny, remote villages in Kenya, and grew up kind of in this way that you often imagine Kenyan-born long-distance runners do, which was running to school barefoot every day for years and years, many miles, and kind of training their body without knowing that they were training to become long-distance runners in a professional arena many years later, but that's what they were essentially doing. And then when they graduated high school, they both became, I would say, sort of discovered, so to speak, by American college coaches. And they were both given college distance running scholarships. So they came from Kenya to the United States. And Shadrach went to Oklahoma State University eventually. And Elvin ended up at University of Arizona, and they met in college. Though they grew up very close to each other in Kenya, they met when they were in college on a cross-country course. So that romance and the story of the two of them meeting, marrying, and then starting this life together is kind of where the book starts.
Was it an easy decision to pick up and move to the United States? I mean, is it that easy to just say, oh, well, the United States is calling, I should probably head on out there?
Not at all. No, not at all. I think that's a misperception. That I think there's a misperception that every Kenyan teenager is great at running, and that is certainly not the case. And an even greater misperception that even if you are good at running and you're a Kenyan, that you can automatically get a scholarship to the United States, because there's much more involved than that. They have to academically be very, very much at the top of their game so that they can catch the eye athletically, but also academically, they have to be able to perform in American universities at the American standard. So their English skills must be excellent. They must be excellent in all the ways that American students are excellent to be able to get into the American universities that are looking at them. So they had to have all of those pieces kind of come together, and then also a great deal of luck. So they both have these college coaches who saw potential in them and were willing to give them these scholarships that kind of help them start on their journeys.
So they come here to the United States, and I'm sure it's not easy to integrate into a system that's probably far different than what they're used to.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, everything you can possibly imagine, starting with just generic culture shock, right? They're coming to the United States with completely different food, language, culture. You know, they hadn't ever learned how to drive cars, how to navigate, you know, shopping malls, and they were coming to slightly different climates as well. So all of those things, those were all challenges. And then layering on top of it, becoming a D1 college athlete and all of the pressures and stress that go with that sort of athletic ability and the need to participate and perform at that level of college athletics was extremely intense for them and hard to adjust to, for sure.
What is the U.S. Army's world-class athlete program?
So that's an incredible program that's been around for many decades, and it essentially trains U.S. Army soldiers to become world-class athletes. Essentially, the hope is that they will become Olympic athletes. So there are athletes who come into the Army as regular soldiers, and then if they meet sort of performance standards, they're allowed to enter this unit. It's essentially a unit, the WCAP unit, the World-Class Athlete Program, and their job then is essentially to train at a very high level to be able to represent the United States in world competitions. So again, they represent a number of different sports, and long distance running is one of those sports that has representation in that Army unit. So it's a really wonderful way for the Army to show their support of athletes, but also a great way for athletes at that level to give back to the United States as well, because most of them end up staying in the Army long after their athletic careers are done and serving the United States, which is something they, especially for these two athletes, really have sought to do because they really feel that the United States has given them so much. So it's really a wonderful program.
So did Elvin and Shadrach both join that program then?
They did. They did. Shadrach joined, and his service was about 4 years. They're on kind of a regular army contract. And at the end of his 4 years of service, he left the army and went off and was picked up by Nike and became a sponsored professional athlete. And Elvin is still in the program. She's a sergeant in the army and so has to keep up sort of regular military duties. But also her main goal and her main job is to train to meet this high level of athletic ability.
And on the other hand, too, I suppose that helps them not only train, but do they have a job? Is all of their expenses paid for? Do they have housing as a result of this program?
They get a regular Army salary, yes, and they have to keep up with regular Army duties, such as, you know, they have to do rotations and they have regular jobs and have to maintain their training, because if they don't maintain the athletic standard that's required of them, then they're transferred out of the unit into a regular Army unit, which is, you know, a unit that could be deployed at any moment. So they're always ready to serve in the capacity of any other soldier in the Army.
And that gets tricky too, because you're coming from another nation and all of a sudden you have to represent another, you're looking to represent another nation, not only in sport, but potentially military as well, which could be uneasy, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, the interesting thing and the beautiful thing about this program and about their service in the Army is that when they come into the Army, they were fast-tracked to citizenship. So they became citizens relatively quickly. And so now they are American citizens. So they consider them they consider themselves Americans first and foremost.
Was that a hard decision, or did they want to become Americans?
They really did want to become American citizens. I don't think that's the case for all Kenyan athletes who come over on distance running scholarships. I think many, many of them choose to be here in the United States for 4 years and then go back to Kenya. But they really fell in love with this country and wanted to create a life here and wanted to give back. And so this kind of was a way for them to do all of those things in one fell swoop.
So give me a couple of little nuggets about their relationship and what you learned about them along their path.
Yeah, they are, they're just bright, bright lights. They are incredibly positive, resilient people. You know, what they've come through to be able to compete at this level is pretty incredible. They are both very easy to laugh. And I actually came to the book very much interested in the world-class athlete program, but not necessarily thinking I was going to focus on particular athletes, but I happened to interact with Shadrach at one of their very first practices that I attended, and he told me his story, and I just absolutely fell in love with him because he is just kind of one of those people who draws a crowd. And so his story was so compelling, and then he sort of turned and said, and you know, that's my wife Elvin on the track practicing right now doing laps. And I had no idea that there was a married couple in this program. And so that story just unfolded, and it was really lovely to kind of get involved in their story and hear about their romance and then really kind of embed myself in their lives for the past couple of years, which has included the birth of their first baby, which has been really fascinating as well to watch that unfold.
That is going to be a fast child, I'm sure.
Yes.
They're together quite a bit, and I'm sure that they probably push each other quite a bit.
They do. Yeah, they do. It's wonderful. I think it's tricky at times, but it is wonderful. I mean, they do have slightly different workouts, and so that makes things a little bit better, I think, at times. But there are times when their training is very closely linked. They have the same coach, and so they very much push themselves. And it's especially powerful for Elvin because Shadrach is often able to pace her because his speed is a little bit better than hers and faster. So he's often able to pace her in races and push her and talk to her and give her encouragement, which is really wonderful.
Sure. What's the state of marathon running right now? We've never seen it more popular, I don't think, in the United States. In Chicago, where I'm at, the Chicago Marathon just expanded the field even more. It seems like more and more people are interested in this sport.
Yeah. It's so great to hear you say that because I think that's true. And I love that because I love running and I think everybody should try it at some point in their life. I think a lot of it is due to COVID, to be honest. There were so many months and, you know, more than a year really where we were so kind of tightly locked down that a lot of people turned to running. And I think a lot of people ended up turning to long distance running and half marathons and marathons and realized the beauty of it. And so I think that's played a big role in it. And it's been really wonderful for me to see, you know, having run for so many decades, it's been wonderful to see the trajectory and the interest in running grow, especially marathoning, and especially American women are doing just a tremendous amount of work and effort. And to be at the Olympic trials this past weekend, it was really magnificent to see the American women performing at a level that's probably slightly higher than the American men now, which is great.
Tell me about your experience down there. You were in Orlando this weekend?
Yeah, I was in Orlando because both Shadrach and Alvin qualified for the U.S. Olympic Marathon trials. So they ran together, which was one of their dreams, to be able to run in that particular race and race to make a spot on the Olympic team, which it was a bit of a long shot. You know, anything can happen in the marathon. But really just getting there and being able to race together was a treat. And so we went down there. My job was mostly to babysit their toddler. Okay. So mom and dad could run this race. But it was so great. It was so great to be in the race hotel and around all these professionals who were, you know, this is the top of their game and the pinnacle of their careers for most of them. So tons of excitement. The crowds were wonderful. The race was just really incredible to watch. And it was really, I was really lucky to be able to cheer both of them on.
Yeah, I caught some of it on television. Yeah. You know, they ran it on NBC. It was a sight. Absolutely. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit. You were or are an immigration lawyer?
I was. Yes, I was many moons ago for a hot minute.
Sure. I don't want to get, you know, we don't need to have a political discussion, but I'm sure that you see what's going on right now in the United States with the surge of migrants coming over. What are your initial thoughts? I know one of the things is the backlog is like 3 million people right now. Yeah. I don't know how we ever get through all of those people.
I know. It's, you know, I've been in that world for so long. And here I am, decades later, many decades after I studied immigration law and practiced for a little minute, and I still don't have an answer to what the solution is. I really don't. It's heartbreaking to see the journeys that people go through to escape, you know, regimes that are terrible and, you know, the dictatorships that exist out there. But I understand it. They're coming to create better lives for their families. And in the same breath, it's a lot for the United States to take on. So you're seeing a huge, huge influx in Chicago, as we are seeing here in Denver as well. I think Denver and Chicago are two of the cities that have been receiving the most in terms of the migration from Venezuela in particular. So it's really challenging. I wish I had an answer to it.
No, I don't think anyone has an answer to it right now. I just see you bring an interesting perspective. I didn't know if, I mean, this really is a unique moment right now with a lot of people trying to become American citizens, which makes your story that much more interesting, you know, from a different perspective, coming in through the college system and finding a place in the United States. I assume that Alvin and Shadrach are thriving here in the United States and doing well and probably are very glad that they made that journey. Have they reached out? Are there any other Kenyans or maybe other marathoners from other nations that they've been able to kind of help in the regards of coming to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is a community of Kenyans in Colorado Springs where they live, and a number of them are part of this Army unit. So they do have connections in that regard and kind of a Kenyan community here in the United States. They've been able to help a little bit with brothers and sisters who are also interested in coming to the U.S. They have brothers and sisters who've gone to other countries, Australia and over in Europe. I think they've both got brothers and sisters in Europe. And then they both have brothers and sisters who have stayed in Kenya. So it's been interesting to talk to them about the different hopes and dreams of all of their siblings. Elvin is one of 10, I believe, and Shadi is one of 9. So it's a lot of siblings, and they've all chosen very different paths, for sure. And I would say they are happy in the United States, but I should add that part of the story that I try to tell in the book is that it's not all butterflies and roses. for immigrants to come to the United States and create new lives here, especially if you are individuals of color and runners of color. It's been really hard. So I think there's sometimes a perception that you come to the United States and then you achieve this American dream and everything is wonderful. They've had a very hard time in moments because they are of color, and they faced a lot of bigotry and hatred, and that has been really eye-opening for them. So on one sense, they deeply love the United States and they're happy that they're here and they're going to be here for the rest of their lives. But it was hard to give up that life in Kenya. And in many ways, they traded one set of real challenges in Kenya for just an entirely new set of challenges here in the United States. So that really is a big part of their story as well.
Did the bigotry end, or they're just better able to handle it now, or people have become more accepting of them?
I think they have faced that, you know, since they've been here and gotten used to it and used to how they should handle it, and have become more aware of the hatred and racism that they face here in the United States from time to time, in order that they can help their son adjust, because he was born here. And so he's an American by birth, and he will never know really a life in Kenya the way they did and those challenges that they faced. So they want to help him integrate and face those challenges in ways that were more difficult for them coming over here as immigrants.
Can you give an example of some of the bigotry they faced?
Yeah, I think they, you know, from time to time, they face bigotry in terms of people saying, well, you're running for the United States, we get it, but you're not a real American, you know, and that is hard because they can't imagine anybody who's served this country more than they have in terms of enlisting the army and literally being ready to die for this country. So in terms of representing the United States and what we stand for, they feel like they've done everything they possibly could. And yet oftentimes they're labeled as not real Americans, or oftentimes the term Kenyan born prefaces their name. And so they will always be seen as outsiders. So that's been kind of hard for them to navigate. And it's not something they talk about really publicly or complain about, because they're deeply grateful for the United States and what this country has given them. But it's been eye-opening for sure for them.
Why a book? Is this something, did you just want to write a book? Or because this seems also like an opportunity for documentary, you know, something of that nature.
Yeah. We shall see. You know, I'm a writer. And if somebody else wants to make a movie about this, I shall not complain. That could be in the works.
All right. So tell us, what's the name of the book? And I don't know, maybe what are some of the things that you really want to press to the public about what this is about?
Yeah. So the book is All in Stride, and it's coming out April 2nd, just in time for the Olympics, which is great because it's got this great Olympic thread. Shadrach is an Olympian. He was a 2016 Olympian in the 10,000 meters. So it's a great time for the book to be coming out. And I think I just want people to understand their journey and what it is like to come to the United States and create a life as an immigrant and go from growing up in a small Kenyan village with very little resources and running to school every day, and then creating a life in the United States to the point where you are representing the United States in the world stage and you are an Olympian. It's pretty amazing, the trajectory of their lives. And it's involved many ups and downs. And it's really the story of perseverance. So it's an inspiring story. And I think it's a great time for this to be told, both because the Olympics are coming up and because of what's going on with immigration in this country. Honestly, you bring up a really good point. So it's a good time for this.
Sure. Where can people buy it? And where can people follow you online?
They can follow me online. Probably Instagram is the best place. And I'm at Joanna Garten Books, JoannaGarton Books. And they can find the book wherever you buy books, your favorite online bookstore. I really give a shout out to local bookstores. And they can also find it on my website, which is joannagarten.com. And it's an ebook. It's going to be in paper form. And it's also going to be in audio form, which is great because I know people love listening to books these days.
The book All in Stride comes out in April. We hope to tell more of Joanna's story in future episodes of Quest for Gold. That'll do it for this week. We'll see you next week for more updates and conversations on Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow.